My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind had done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove. I got nothing to prove.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Mormon Expression Voices. I'm Glenn Ausland, and I'm here today with Ryan and Krista. Do you want to give your last names as well?
Sure, why not?
All right, Ryan and Krista Evans. And I think we've got some unique discussions to have with them today because Krista is a Mormon psychic, and you're the first Mormon psychic that I've ever heard of, that I've ever
Probably.
Known of. Do you know of any other Mormon psychics?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, so we're going to hear Ryan and Krista's story today and have a nice discussion over the next hour or so. So let's go ahead and start. Let's start with you, Ryan. Tell us a little bit about your background and history with the church. Where were you raised and what kind of a home were you brought up in with the church?
I was born in Rexburg, Idaho. I don't know how many generations back we go as Mormons, but my dad came from a family of 11, 10 brothers, or 7 brothers. They all went on missions. Very Mormon family. We moved around a bit with my dad's job, lived in Idaho, different parts of Idaho, and then Indiana, then out to Oregon for the end of high school, and down to California. I went to a year at BYU, served a mission in Costa Rica, got married in the temple with my ex-wife, went through a divorce several years ago after about 7 years of marriage, and wasn't a good marriage at all, and have since met Krista. That's kind of real quick and dirty.
Yeah.
My experience, but
and how would you characterize yourself as a Mormon? A true believing Mormon, kind of Jack Mormon? Where do you feel like you fall on the spectrum there?
Well, growing up, I was definitely a true believing Mormon, and I thought about things and read a lot, but I had an explanation for everything, and I understood how everything worked together. At this point, I'm not sure where I fit in. We're attending church, but it's more just I think that my beliefs go beyond what Mormonism teaches, more closely to what I feel Joseph Smith originally taught, and kind of in the direction that I feel that Joseph Smith meant the church to go in, but okay. It's my own personal feeling about it.
All right. Well, we'll get back to some of those ideas and explore that a bit more, I'm sure, as the discussion evolves. So let's jump over to you, Krista, and talk about your background and your upbringing and what it was that brought you into the church.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't grow up Mormon at all, actually. My parents, I loved them dearly. They were pretty kind of anti-church, I would say. Anti any church. My neighbors were all Mormon, however. I grew up in a Mormon neighborhood. But when I was a kid, I was always kind of very naturally religious, I want to say, or drawn to things of a spiritual manner. And so I would sneak out of the house on Sunday morning to go to a church that I could walk to that had a 6 a.m. service on Sunday. It was an Episcopal church. So I would sneak out and do that because then I wouldn't get in trouble for doing that. because church was a waste of time.
So your parents would punish you if you went to church?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not punish me, but
they'd frown upon it.
Yeah, my dad was more open to it than my mom. I always hung out with the Mormons, and I babysat a lot of Mormons when I was older because I grew up and all my neighbors were Mormon, and so they were always teaching me their Sunday school lessons. Like, I would have them teach it to me during the week. because I didn't go, obviously.
And what part of the country did you grow up in?
I grew up in Fresno, California. Okay. I lived other places. I then left Fresno to, I got a scholarship to go to Northwestern University. And then from there, I'm actually finishing a PhD at Princeton right now. I'm finishing up my dissertation in music history and women's studies. So, but my dissertation is more American social history, 18th century American social history. Mm-hmm. Where do I go from here? I was in New Jersey and I moved back to California. And I had had this Kundalini awakening and I was really into yoga and I practiced a lot of kirtan, which I still do, which is part of Hinduism. But anyway, I have a whole nother take on what kirtan means.
Yeah.
As a Mormon, it, anyway, but I was, do you want to know why I converted to Mormonism right now?
Quickly, yeah, and then I want to backtrack and get into these experiences that I don't dare try to pronounce.
Okay.
Awakenings and stuff. Yeah.
I was swimming. I had met Ryan, and I was like, "There's no way I'm becoming Mormon. Not for me. Mormons are because I was such a feminist. I mean, I still am really a feminist, but I don't like the way Mormons treat women, and that was it. I wasn't interested.
And what stage of Ryan's Mormonness did you meet him?
I was questioning a lot of things.
Okay, so you weren't like the hard and fast down the line kind of Mormon,
right. But
it was still a little.
I'd been divorced for several years, and after not being in the Mormon family and fitting in with everything, then you kind of start questioning things because you don't quite fit in with everything else. So at that point, I was questioning things.
Yeah, I know what that's like. All right, Krista. So you met Ryan, and you were thinking there's no way you were going to become a Mormon.
Oh, I told him there was no way.
Yeah.
And I was swimming in the pool, and usually I can tell when there's like a voice in my head and then when there's an external voice. And one of the two times in my life, one was a voice telling me to move to California. And the other, I'm swimming in the pool, and I hear this voice that said, "Join the Mormon church." And I stop swimming in the middle of a lap. And I'm looking around for who's talking to me, and there was nobody there. And I realized, oh, I just heard a voice, and I said, you know, I was pretty angry, actually. Frankly, I don't really get that angry, but I was like, are you joking? Like, you're telling me to do what? And I said, show me truth. And I saw this image of Joseph Smith and these golden plates, which I didn't even know what the golden plates were. Obviously, my Mormon education was lacking. And when I got out of the pool, I called Ryan and I told him like, hey, I saw this vision after I had this experience. Like, what does that mean? And he laughed at me basically. And I was really angry for like a week, I think. I was like, there's no way I'm doing this. But you know, when you hear something like that, I've learned listen. And when I really started to read about Mormonism and investigate it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is where I belong. It was true. I knew I just was kind of washed over me. I don't know.
And so that was about a year and a half, 2 years ago that you had this experience?
Yeah, it was in September of 2009, I guess. Wait, 2010. I don't even know what year it is. Yeah.
And are you still feeling that way? You're still feeling that the church is true, you were led to join this?
I do. I feel like I was led to join it. I feel like, well, you know, I guess I have a different take on some things. Like Ryan gets kind of caught up in these little minutia, and I'm like, big picture, this is great. You know, I feel strongly about that. That's where I'm supposed to be, and that Joseph Smith was a true prophet, and I don't know.
So why don't you walk me through that experience a little bit? So you were angry that you heard this voice telling you to join the church.
Well, yeah.
But you followed it.
Well, because that's, yeah. And when I hear something that strongly, well, kind of anything, I've realized that if I don't follow it, eventually it comes back to slap me around. So I do follow it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So in investigating and joining, there must have been some things that you learned about then that you really identified with and came to value, I'm guessing. Is that the case?
So, yeah, I think so. I kind of felt like Ryan has said, and I kind of feel like this is true, like, you're more Mormon than most Mormons, even though you didn't know it.
Yeah, she was, when I met her, she was, I mean, she drank coffee some, but she hardly ever drank, she never smoked, she didn't, I mean, just, her lifestyle was very Mormon. She never swore, she never, you know, all the things that we think of when we think of Mormons, that's kind of how Krista was, and she just lived a very wholesome Mormon lifestyle. It was, I felt like she was more Mormon than I was.
Yeah.
I still feel like that hearing you talk.
Okay, so was that one of the appeals then when you joined and started participating? You felt like you fit in those areas?
Well, I wouldn't.
Not really.
I don't think that was the appeal. It's more of the spiritual side that draws me always. I feel like they have just, or Mormons have they, I'm talking about them, yeah. Just how we conceive of God and feel God and have personal experiences with God. And I also, I think, identify pretty strongly with Joseph Smith and his experiences, I guess, bring, you know, similar to my own. I kind of hold that close to my heart in a way because I, you know, and not like I'm Joseph Smith, I'm not saying that, but it can be difficult to know the things that I know and sometimes have to keep your mouth shut. I think that's one of the hardest things about being like I am. I'm getting tears in my eyes just thinking about
it. Yeah, I can hear it. That's nice.
It's hard to know, like, when someone's going to die. I mean, what do you do with that information? Or that's something I've been struggling with lately. Like, do you tell someone, oh, your daughter's really, really sick? Or, you know, some people you can, and, you know, usually I try to read on people only when they ask me, but it's, you know, it's definitely provided a lot of challenges. And so I think that sometimes knowing someone else is like that is just really helpful. And I, you know, and to know, I don't think he always made the right choices as a human, but to know that I have a gift from God and I'm supposed to use it. And I feel like he held that same truth. And so I feel like that is definitely part of the draw, is because it, you know, I feel like even if you don't always take the right steps, you know, if you're true and you're willing to change and you're willing to kind of be a vehicle for God and do what you're asked to do, even if it's what you least want to do, then that's, you know, how we're supposed to live our lives, I feel like.
All right. So you feel that strong connection to Joseph Smith. And Ryan, you mentioned that you feel like, at least where you are in the church right now, is kind of goes back to Joseph Smith and what he restored and the direction you think the church should have gone. What I'm really curious about right now, Krista, because your connection is so based upon this spiritual sensitivity that, mm-hmm. that you have, that I wouldn't say that I have anything close to that, and I would imagine that most of our listeners don't either. So can you describe, and maybe this is where we back up and you talk about these awakening experiences that you've had, like what is it mean, this gift that you have from God? What is it? What does it do? How did you become aware of it?
Well, I can tell you that's kind of two questions, I think.
Yeah,
at least. You know, how did this happen and what does it feel like? Do you want me to start with how it happened?
Sure. And then, yeah.
Okay. My grandmother was a psychic and I didn't know it. That's a whole nother story. But when I was a kid, I like couldn't sleep as a child because I was hearing ghosts talking all night. It was awful, actually. I used to just walk around the house because I was hearing these voices, and I later could kind of shut it off. I didn't know what it was, and I would tell them, go away, like, I'll talk to you later when I'm older. And, you know, I definitely had some experiences as a child and really kind of ran away from it. It was overwhelming. You know, I really wished I had someone step in to help me, but
Did you tell people about what you were experiencing?
I didn't tell anybody. I just kind of, I thought it was kind of normal on one hand, and then on the other hand, I feel like I was so scared of it, I just shut it off.
She did, as a child, she also broke open her head, which I think is a lot of people with these gifts had some type of
massive head injury.
Yeah.
But that's just from my, you know, my friends and stuff. Usually there's some kind of head injury involved. I had fallen when I was 2 out of a high chair, and I hit the back of my head so hard I split open the front of my head, the front of my skull. And then I had, like, learning problems at first. I couldn't read for a long time, and then all of a sudden I just went with it's this is kind of tangential, but when I was in high school, this eye doctor was trying this like experimental vision therapy on me, because at that point I was like in remedial English. Okay, and now I'm getting a PhD at Princeton and can read in 4 languages, so yeah. It worked, right? And all of a sudden I was like super, super smart. And I was also a musical prodigy as a child, because I could like get music. And I think that that's where I really poured myself into, and all these feelings, because I can feel other people's feelings. Like I would go into a hospital and pass out just because I couldn't distinguish my own feelings from the feelings of the people in the room. Which has been something, it's just a work in progress, I guess, learning to distinguish the two and to protect myself from being a sponge all the time. Anyway, that's the head injury stuff. Where was I going with this?
So you kind of suppressed it growing up.
Yeah, I suppressed it. And then, you know, I had a scholarship and at Northwestern, and then I was at Princeton, and at Princeton was a very stressful environment. And I started getting into yoga because of an injury. I was a performer and I had this injury right when, you know, I started to, you know, get work as a professional. And then I was told I'd never be able to play again. So that's why I decided to go the academic route in grad school, and I had a double major in my undergrad. So I was like, oh, I'll go, you know, into academia and see what happens. I just had this feeling I would be able to play again. And I could play again. I, through yoga, I healed my hand injuries from playing my flute too much. but I got, you know, kind of sucked up into loving academia and also into yoga, which I started. I resisted that too, but physical therapists kept saying, do yoga and you'll strengthen your arms and you'll, you know, you'll be better. And I was like, okay, I'll try this to play again, because I thought only weird people do yoga and they like sit around and make weird noises and try to act way too serious. You know, I'm not all about, oh, let's be serious. I'm like, oh, these people are so pretentious. They sit around and, you know, they ohm and they, oh, I'm, you know, better than you because I do yoga. And that's just not my cup of tea. But I got really, really into it. I had this hilarious teacher, Michael, who just, and I was terrible at the physical part of yoga, but it was the spiritual side that really, really drew me. And I was totally hooked, completely hooked.
So when you say physical side, I understand what you mean, because I can picture it, and I've tried it before a little bit. Mm-hmm. But when you say spiritual, I'm lost. Like what is that? Is that the meditative aspect of yoga?
The meditative aspect, I think, being in the breathing, like I practice a lot of vinyasa yoga. I do other styles now too, but it's like everything's about your breath and just the circle of your breath. So if you just stick with your breath, and if your breath gets disrupted, you're doing it wrong. And it's this like intense focus, and also the meditation that the physical practice of yoga started to prepare yourself to sit in meditation, which has been kind of taken out a lot in mainstream America. Obviously, it's all about making your butt look good. But that's not originally what it was for. It was to get all the wiggles out of you so that you could sit in long periods meditating.
Or to make your spiritual butt look good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, while I love the physical side of yoga, I think, to me, too, it's a form of meditation, just breathing with the physical postures. I mean, when you get to where you can flow them together, and you're, you know, everything is just the focus on your breath in that moment right now. And for me, I think that was really useful to cut out all the noise. And I noticed my performance in academia got way better, because all of a sudden I could just focus on what was in front of me. And I feel like that ties into being a psychic as well, because I only really can tune in when I can cut out everything else. But through yoga, I got really into my practice, and I went to a, you know, I was having some struggles in my life as well. And I went to a yoga teacher training in, what year was it? 2009, the summer of 2009. I had like, I wanted this freedom seeking adventure. So I went and I climbed to the top of Half Dome, and then I went to my yoga teacher training, for 3 weeks at White Lotus in Santa Barbara, which is just an amazing place. And it was there that I, had this, what I now know to be called a Kundalini experience. But at the time, I had no idea what that was. Like, I wasn't into reading yoga books. I was just into doing yoga. I can be very, I guess, loosey-goosey about the particulars. So I loved it.
I'm sorry. When you were doing this, were you still kind of shutting off that empathic psychic side of you, or were you exploring it and kind of embracing it a little bit more?
No, I definitely, it was shut off. It was totally shut off. I mean, I think I was starting to, obviously by going and practicing yoga that much and being, you know, I would go and practice 3 hours a day kind of thing. In doing that, obviously I'm becoming more in touch with the person inside. But I was also a very different person in the external too. I was this very serious academic. I mean, I kind of look at that image now and I laugh. I'm still serious about my academic work, but I'm not so uptight, I guess. but I went to this teacher training, and the first time it happened, the Kundalini, I was in a meditation actually, and we had a whole day of silence or a morning of silence before, something like that, where no one had been talking. And I went into meditation, and my hands and my head started to shake. And I could kind of feel it, but I couldn't really feel it. I don't know how else to describe it. But one of my teachers came up to me after the meditation and was like, "Did you notice what was happening?" And I was like, "Yeah, a little, but I didn't really have an idea of what was going on." And then in a meditation at the end of our yoga practice, I like went out of my body and I couldn't come back in. And my body was like shaking, and I was off the ground. Like, I was on the tailbone and the very tip of my head, and something was pulling me in the air. I've never felt anything like that before. It was amazing. And it was, my body was so hot that everybody else came out of meditation because the room got so hot. It was like I had lit a fire in my body. And I couldn't come back down. So I was out there for like an hour or something, and people came and they were throwing cold towels on me, like trying to get me to come out of this meditative whatever. And I guess I could have come out if I wanted to, I guess, but on a very deep level, it felt like the most amazing thing I've ever felt in my life. It felt like I finally let go.
So were they responding to you the way that somebody would respond to somebody that was having an epileptic seizure and they were trying to get you? I mean, did they kind of see that from the outside physical, and they were approaching it that way?
They were worried, I think, just because it kept happening like every day. And it was like, well, maybe you're having heat stroke. And I'm like, I'm not having heat stroke. I grew up in Fresno and I love the heat. I'm not having heat stroke.
So you were doing this multiple times where you would get into this meditative position and then your spirit would leave your body.
Yeah. And I called, we didn't have phones and we didn't have internet and anything. And I snuck out of the yoga retreat center. And yeah, I was staying at that point in time. I was in a tent by myself by the waterfall, and the people there, they were amazing. I'm not trying to talk bad about them, but they were worried that I would go into one of these when no one was around. And so they brought me up and had me staying with someone. Even though I had my own personal waterfall before, but, I called this friend of mine who had been in an ashram in Hawaii for like 8 years. And I called him cause I knew it was something of the spirit. I just knew it, you know, and I called him and I said, "This is what happened. This is what's happening to me." And he's like, "Oh, it's Kundalini." And at the yoga retreat center, they started to say, "We think it's Kundalini." And at first they thought I was faking it. And I'm like, I don't even know what Kundalini is. I've never opened a yoga book. Here I am, this very learned academic. And I'm like, you know, I feel things really strongly. So I'm like, I don't need to worry about particulars in that part of my life. I'm so worried about them in every other part. So I had never read about it, but I pulled out some books from the library there and I started reading a little bit as well, because I just knew I needed to let this process go forward. Cause I just could feel it. And, I saw, oh wow, like other people have had this experience. That's according to these yogis, that's why you practice yoga, because you want to have this kundalini awakening. The kundalini is the energy that lies latent at the base of your spine. So when you unleash your kundalini, it's like you've reached bliss. And the kundalini, it goes up all the way through your body, up to your head, and then back down, and it clears out what we call in yoga all your chakras, so all your energy centers. And I kind of experienced it in that way too, like I would hit particular parts of my body and just releasing, I think, blocked emotions. And when I was having the first one, this is interesting, I think it was the first time, like everyone had left the room when it started, and I was still, you know, just sitting there meditating, and everyone came, well, not everyone, but a bunch of people came back into the room, and my eyes were closed and I was in this state of bliss. And for the first time in my life, I could feel every person in the room and tell you who they were, even though my eyes were closed, just by their energy. And I had never, I mean, my life was just never the same after that first experience. And the yoga center brought in a psychic because I couldn't get it to stop. And the psychic told me, Rex, I think his name was Rex, he said, you're psychic, like that's what this is. And he kind of, you know, lessened everyone's fears about it. And he just said, your grandmother was psychic and you have your gift and you have this, the same gift, and this is the path your life is supposed to take, which I also wasn't very receptive to. I was like, what? I'm getting a PhD at Princeton. I'm not going to go out and become a psychic. Like those are crazy people, you know? But at the same time, I think I knew it was true, you know?
Wow. So is that something that you're able to recreate now? You're able to have those experiences, or is it something that just happened during that span of time?
I can definitely have those experiences. I'm not at a point where I want to have them right now. Mm. And I'm a lot clearer. I mean, there are times when they're not as violent, I would say, but I don't think I would want them as violent. Like I would end up hitting myself against a wall, or, I mean, it was just, I think because I had repressed this energy for so long. But I, you know, it's that same kind of trance energy when I'm channeling or talking to someone who's passed, or, you know, doing psychic work or talking to an animal, where I'm just kind of gone, you know, I'm not even there. I feel like I'm like a radio in which some other thing is coming through me. So it's that same kind of leaving the body, but not in a scary way. I feel like the kundalini, the way that it erupted was a little, I think because I repressed it for so long, it was a little overwhelming. But
so I've got to ask Ryan some questions now, because I just imagine myself, you know, my experience being raised Mormon, I was so afraid of this kind of thing. You know, I mean, anything like what Chris is describing is just of the devil. Right. So like when you met her and you started talking, you became aware that she had this gift, what was your impression of it?
Well, I had, going through the divorce, I tried to go out. So I got on a meetup group and they did paranormal research. So I was like, hey, I can go ghost hunting on the weekend. It's something to do, you know, just to pass the time, meet people. So I had gone to a meetup group, had the psychic from San Francisco come, and he was going to do a group reading for everybody. And I was like, I've never experienced anything like this. This will be kind of fun. So I sat down, and his name was Terry Yoder. He came, and I, you know, my gay psychic friend from San Francisco came and did these readings for everybody. And in my reading, he talked to me a little bit, and he, you know, when he found out I was Mormon, he grew up very Christian, you know, evangelical, and he said, I would love to just sit and talk to you for hours. And as we were leaving, we were both leaving at the same time, and he says, hey, you busy? Why don't you come to the hotel? We can keep talking. And so I went to his hotel, and we stayed up all night just talking, and it was just an amazing experience, talking about, you know, his gifts and experiencing some of that. And a few other things, I was going to a meditation group, and somebody came up to me and just said, hey, you need to read this book, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And I said, okay, I wrote it down and went to the bookstore, bought it. And I think that book really made a big, big impact on my life. It's an autobiography of Paramahansa Yogananda and his experiences in India and then coming to the West. And he was in the early 1900s. An amazing book. And
but so you were already pretty well prepared.
Yeah, that kind of opened me up to...
He was really open to it. Yeah.
It intrigued me that they were having these spiritual experiences. You know, Paramahansa Yogananda gives his life experience and all these amazing gurus and yogis that he meets and these miraculous things that happen around him. And, you know, it's like, this is what I want from church. I want to have those miraculous experiences like what Joseph Smith had. You know, that's what I felt like was missing for me.
Like when you say what Joseph Smith had, like I don't remember any stories that were like a Kundalini experience for Joseph Smith kind of thing. So like what exactly do you mean the experience? It, the
just
spiritual
that connection
stuff?
connection with God. You know, Doctrine and Covenants 76, when he sees the heavens, and Paramahansa Yogananda actually has a very similar experience where his guru had died and then comes back to him and says, and he asks what is out there. And the guru explains basically three different degrees, three different planes of existence. And as we go through our reincarnate states, we go from one plane to another as we're ready. And we're just progressing through these planes of existences. And it was very similar to what Joseph Smith was describing in Doctrine and Covenants 76. And that just that kind of connection with the divine, with God.
And so as you were learning about these things, you were finding validation for your Mormon beliefs. Maybe not exactly
details, but
at a big enough level that you can go, okay, there's some convergence here.
Yeah. And I feel strongly that, this is kind of getting off subject, I feel strongly that the church is heading in the wrong direction. They're so worried about being a Christian religion that they're missing the fact that there are other religions that we're much, much closer to in a lot of ways, you know, like Buddhism. And those religions are actually growing, where Christianity, I think, is not. And it's unfortunate the church doesn't turn, you know, hey, we're real similar to what the Buddhists believe, rather than emphasizing that we're Christian just like you, but we're not actually Christian just like all these other Christian churches.
Okay. All right, so you guys met, you were very prepared and accepted accepting of Krista. And you know, Krista, you mentioned something as you were talking about being like a radio, that you're able. And so right now maybe is a good time to kind of spell out exactly what your gifts are. You're able to communicate with the dead. What else? What are you able to do?
I talk to dead people, like the Sixth Sense.
Right.
I call it reading people. So I kind of can tell you about your past and your future and kind of where blockages are. I mean, I guess I'm really only interested in looking as long as I can help, and it helps you move into a better future, I guess.
Well, maybe I can.
Okay, so, Ryan's going to translate.
I think Krista and I, we both believe that, you know, and whether this is the case or not, you know, this our interpretation of things, but you know, I think that there is reincarnation. And so as we go through these life cycles, there are certain things that we're learning. And we also pick up, you know, it's karma. We pick up blocks and we, you know, we have traumatic events happen to us in past lives and those carry forward
and present lives. They carry forward.
And so
sometimes you don't even know. I think I've noticed with people, like, you know, well, what happened? This particular thing happened when you were three and it's very traumatic. And I can kind of take the edge off of that and kind of...
Yeah, energetically heals some of the trauma that your body holds and your spirit holds. And she's really interested in helping people get through those blockages so that they can continue progressing in other aspects of their lives rather than being held back.
The reincarnation point that you're talking about, have you looked into the obscure doctrine of multiple mortal probations?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you feel like there's some basis for that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The way I always interpret things is, well, it's how I see it. It's how I conceive of people, and whether that's truth or that's just the way that I can understand it in the human form, as long as because I feel like existence and God and all these things that we're always asking questions about, it's just way too vast to understand. If I tried to sit around and understand what I do and how I do it, I would go crazy. Like, I don't know, it's just, the universe is this hugely vast thing. So if that's the way that it can appear to me, and that's the way, I have enough, as a historian, I'm like, I like my evidence, and I have enough evidence of being right and of helping people that, I don't really doubt that anymore, whether it's true or whether it's not. And,
Well, let's quickly just flush out everything that you can do and then spend a little time talking about each one. So you have the being able to communicate with dead people. You're able to pick up a person's kind of spiritual essence and their blockages and some future and past with that.
And even other people, like a lot of times people come to me because I have clients and they want to know about someone they're working with, or they want to know about should they do business with this person or not. And I can kind of, okay, this will be what happens if you go into business with this person. Like, it can be kind of banal in that way too, just like, this is a good direction to go. This is not, this will happen to you in 6 months. This, won't. I also talk to animals, which is something I love to do. And they call animal communicators a lot of times, or animal whisperers. And that, the way I explain that is, and the way it feels to be able to do these different things, is I feel like I have a bunch of different wires on the top of my head. I don't know how to describe it. After I had my like awakening was like the first time I could feel inside my brain. And I kind of feel like things hook in and come in at different parts of my brain. And it's like reading, we don't think a language either. We think a thought form. So animals have those same thought forms too. So they can talk. I mean, I've healed paralyzed dogs and I don't even know what else, a bunch of stuff to where, because they can tell you what's wrong, even though a vet can't,
She helps cats pee in the litter box.
Yes, that's something a lot of people come to me for. No kidding, that's my most common animal call, is the cat won't pee in the litter box. So I have to talk to the cat and figure out, they always have a different reason. I know, isn't that ridiculous? But it helps people.
Okay,
what are
some of the cat's reasons?
Sometimes they're angry. One time, I don't even remember. See, I have a hard time remembering what I do. The room is funny. One cat was like afraid of the room where the litter box was. One time the cat didn't like the litter box. Another time the cat doesn't like the woman's boyfriend. So the cat's going to pee on her bed as long as her boyfriend sleeps over. Like,
so the cat knows that this is a weapon, that it can pee on things and it.
Yes.
Yeah. The cat's aware of that.
Yeah, cats are definitely aware of that. That's my... Ryan thinks that's, like, hilarious.
Yeah.
But, and,
She's 6 for 6 and helping cats pee in the litter box. So it's a pretty good record.
I know, it's crazy, right?
It's great. It's fantastic. So you've also mentioned healing as a part of this. So this is another, maybe a fourth... Because you're able to do like spiritual healing, recognizing where there are blockages. How does something like that work? Outside of just a diagnosis.
I can see, I guess, people's energy fields and see where things are blocked. Or I do medical intuition stuff too. So people have a health problem and they don't know what it is, or doctors don't know what it is, and then they come to you, or they've been diagnosed with that, and I can tell you if that's not right or if that is right, or which route to take for treatment, or...
Well, just some specifics. My dad will never admit to this, but his back was hurting so bad he couldn't even walk. And he was going to go to the doctor the next day, and Krista's done massage, and so she offered to massage his back for him, help him feel better. And
but I wasn't really, I did some massage, but really I was doing energetic corrections on him, but I didn't want to tell him. That's terrible. I usually don't do that, but
Is that Reiki? Is that what that is?
Well, it's very beyond Reiki,
okay.
I would call it. Reiki is like kindergarten, you know. No, it's great. Yeah. It's just kind of like, I am giving you universal life energy, and that's great if you're not as intuitive, you know, but I can be more direct. Like, then let me put my hand somewhere and hope the energy goes to the right place. Like, I'll find exactly where it needs to go and correct where it is instead of just sitting there giving energy. I move the energy around.
How?
I studied with people too. For those specific types of corrections, I do a method called Ewan method. And I don't know, it's just something I can do and I'm really good at it. I don't know how to explain it more than that.
But it's not something that she just kind of naturally just, I mean, some of it comes naturally to her, but she has actually, she's studied with
multiple teachers.
Yeah.
You know, you have this gift and you have to, I mean, you have to do your end too. You know, God gives you the gift, but you can really, you can really screw people up too. So, and that's something I always try to do the right thing, and I always try to learn the techniques so that I'm helping people in the best way I can. So,
how would you screw somebody up? Like, put them out of balance with energy or something?
Yeah, and also sometimes, which is something I'm always very aware of, is that, you know, as a psychic, we call it, you have to be clear. And that means you just have to let go of yourself, and any preconceptions you have to go out the window. Because the second you start interpreting or doing what you think that person needs, you're not a psychic. You're just being bossy, you know? And I've learned a lot, I guess, in that with people I've worked with. It's like, you know, I've had some clients that I would probably never want to talk to you in real life. I don't like you. And then, not to say that in a mean way, but we would never associate with each other. And yet I'm getting this amazing message of all these important things that you have in this lifetime. It's very humbling because I realize how wrong I am as a person. And also, you know, just kind of sometimes you get images and they don't make sense to you. So the second you start to interpret those images and tell them to someone else, those are interpretations. That's not what you got. So, you know, if I'm like, one time I was talking to a guy's mother who had passed over. And I was like, she was waving around this muffin tin. And like, instead of interpreting, oh, your mom loved to bake, which is, I think, sometimes an error psychics make, I just say, well, she's waving around a muffin tin, you know, like that makes no sense to me. A lot of times I get things that make just absolutely no sense. And the only thing he had that was his mother's was her cast iron muffin tin. And it just brought him to tears. And, you know, a lot of things like that, where you get an image and it just, or even on people's spiritual journey, life will be like, you know, you get a very just specific image of what. And you just convey that image, and that's something I think that is really important.
Do you ever like hold back where you think you see something and maybe they need healing, but you don't do it because you get the sense that they need to go through this on their own, they need to have this discovery on their own?
Yeah, and sometimes I get that, and sometimes I'll tell them, you need to do this on your own. Sometimes I correct things and I won't tell them what it is, because what matters is the correction, not... Because people get stuck in the story, too. And when you think about something all the time, you can kind of recreate it. I don't try to be, that I have your fate in my hands or something. But it is hard to know sometimes how much to say and who to say it to. Especially when, like, you know, there's one thing when, you know, people are a paying client. And it's another thing when it's your family member. That's something that can be challenging. I like to paint this picture that, oh, I can just turn this off and turn that on, which I'm pretty good about that, but it doesn't exactly work that way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I pull up Facebook and all of a sudden, sometimes photographs do it. There's a person and I'm like, oh man, you're going to get divorced in 2 months. Okay. Like, you know, what do you do with that? Or a health problem, or, you know, it can be challenging, or if someone is going to die, relative, and you know it. I mean, what do you?
So when that happens, do you feel like you're predicting the future, or do you feel like you're just remembering what's already happened?
You know what? I don't know what it is. I don't know if time exists or if it has already. I don't feel like I predict the future. I feel like sometimes there is a future out there, because sometimes it's like I can see two paths, and you can either go on one or you can go on the other. You know, we have so much free will, and that's something that I guess I believe strongly, having done this, you know, for quite some time now, or being more familiar with my gifts, is that, you know, there's always options, and there's always, you know, there will be. Sometimes there's just a clear path and that's going to happen. And sometimes it's like, you better watch your actions, because you're at this pivotal point where you can go one way or the other. And I'm going to tell you what's down one path, and I'm going to tell you what's down the other. And you have to choose which way you're going. So is it all written out in stone? No, I don't really think it is, but it doesn't. I don't know how to describe it.
Well, one of the questions I had earlier is about the nature of God. You know, if this is a gift from God, and you're able to, you know, see somebody's path and maybe even help them or interfere, I kind of wonder why God doesn't do that more actively, or is he? I guess is a question. Is that the way that he would want you to use this gift? Because, you know, I think the Mormon concept of God, at least the way that I've come to understand it in a lot of ways, is there's some areas where he gets really involved. You know, the classic example is helping you find your car keys, right? But then there's other things that he just lets happen, you know, these really horrid things. You know, somebody's going to die, somebody's going to be raped, somebody's going to get divorced. You know, he doesn't step in and go, hey, this is going to happen, and prevent it from happening. So how does that nature of God resonate with you? Does it resonate with your experience? Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think, you know, I feel like we're put in certain lives to experience certain things and learn certain lessons. And so we're going to learn those lessons no matter what it takes to learn that. Like, I feel like God gives us those, you know, it's always an opportunity for growth. I think, and it's terrible to say that, but I think everything happens for a reason. I mean, sometimes things happen, I think, because you didn't listen when you got a smaller message that's what you needed to learn.
So, I mean, like a really terrible example, you know, a child who's abused to the point where they're murdered.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something for them to learn and grow from.
I don't know. You know what? I don't know. I'm not the judge, I guess. And I guess to myself, I don't need that answer. I feel like God knows the answer. And I feel like, I guess that's my way of coping with it, because otherwise I think I'd be so weighed down with everybody's problems. I'm always just amazed at what people go through. I just have to say, I think that God has a reason, and that's not my reason to know. I can help in the ways that I can help. And, you know, if I can assist people on their path, I mean, there are horrible things. I mean, there are so many awful things in this world, and so many horrible things that people experience. And especially, I guess, being this way, I think I kind of see, I look it in the eyes and I see it in the face a lot, just people's, just their struggles. And, you know, even people you would envy from the outside, a lot of times it's just like, you lived through what?
Yeah.
You know, it just, that I just, God must have a reason, and it's not my place to intrude.
Do you get the sense, you know, having experience communicating with people who've passed on, are they still experiencing things and learning and growing and progressing in the ways that people here would? I mean, do you feel like that continues on the other side? Are you that tuned into it?
Yeah. No, I think it does. Well, it depends. I mean, there are people who get stuck on this earth too, and there are people who don't move on. And sometimes I can help those people move on. That's something else I do, I guess. But I do feel like it continues. And, you know, through life, we're always with the same people too, you know, like, which I think is beautiful. But, you know, we're all kind of joined together. It's not just a bunch of individual souls. It's, you know, we're all different souls on a journey kind of tied together. But I do. I feel like people progress and they learn. And, you know, a lot of times when people come through, like, if I have a schedule session, if I have a session scheduled for a client, and sometimes like the day before, their mom or their aunt or somebody just starts following me around the day before, you know, just like, I have to have this message and you have to tell this person. And I know you're talking to them. It's kind of a weird experience.
This is the person that's passed on is following you around.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've had it be a mother. I've had it be an aunt, you know, just someone with an apology. Usually when they come through that strongly and it's not like, okay, you want to talk to your dad, I'm going to find your dad. You know, when it's someone who will bother you and bother you and bother you. And then I call up this client and I'm like, I know, you know, when their session is, and I'm like, your aunt is with me. Like, why? And she wants to tell you something, like, then it's an apology or it's something that I guess shows to me that they are growing still, that you can have regrets that you did things wrong, or and that you want to come back and make that, you know, kind of heal that wound some.
So they go through their own 12-step program in the hereafter.
Yeah, or something. Yeah.
Interesting. Do you have any other insights of, you know, what the hereafter would be like? Especially where it correlates with what Mormonism teaches. I mean, is there, do you see things that are like a spirit prison, spirit hell, the importance of baptism and ordinances? Do people ever come back and say, hey, I need my work done for me?
I don't know. I mean, is that what you could say some of these ghosts are doing? I don't.
Well, do they ever come back, like non-Mormon ghosts come back and say, hey, I need you to have these people do this work for me so that I can accept baptism on the other side and move on?
You know, honestly, that's something I'm kind of afraid to get into at this point. Because I feel, this is just really putting myself out there, but I'm, you know, doing that type of thing without someone's permission is a little scary to me. It's scary to me. I don't like to do things without permission. So on one hand, I do think there are probably, that there are people who come back and need that, but I also think there are probably work being done on people against their will, and I think that's wrong. That's where I feel like someone like me could be useful because, well, but I'm weird. But, you know, just to know what people want. People don't always want the same thing. So it kind of scares me to get into that stuff, honestly, as a Mormon, just because I feel like I have this whole other world going on. I have a hard time, I guess, how would I convey that to people around me? I don't know. I kind of am like the closeted Mormon psychic, like.
So the people in your ward don't, the people in your ward don't know that you.
Well, I work with some people in my ward though. Yeah. So that's not entirely true. And I work with some people in different wards. Yeah. But I don't go around and introduce myself. Hi, I'm a psychic. I might as well, like, hi, I'm a freak show. I mean, it's just, but I'm not like that with anyone. It's not just that I don't do that with Mormons. It's that, you know, some of my family members don't even know what I do. I just kind of laugh it off. Ryan, do you have something else to say?
No. I mean, my family's had a hard time with it.
Yeah, his family has had a really
hard
time with
my mom definitely had the reaction, well, this is of the devil and you can't do this, and we don't talk about it.
Even after your dad's back got fixed?
No one talks about it. They just said whatever I was doing was weird.
Oh.
Yeah. Even though he didn't go to the doctor the next day.
Nothing.
And his back was fine. No one said a word about it.
It scared his mom, I think.
Well, I'm sorry.
Scary.
I had a story on my mission about a guy who received a faith healing from a, you know, pagan faith healer. And the mission president found out about it and cast out the devil, and the arm snapped again. So there's definitely those stories and those fears out there that... yeah. And, you know, with all the faith healing and things that you're able to do, Ryan, do you ever get jealous that, you know, she doesn't even have the priesthood and she's able to do these things? And...
No, it's more the we'll go ghost hunting, and there are some people that kind of sense the ghosts and kind of, you know, and Krista kind of confirms that, yeah, you're actually feeling that, and I get absolutely nothing. And so I kind of feel jealous of that a little bit, but at the same time.
But I need him to, like, I feel more when Ryan is around, actually, because I feel like he's so grounded and he's so just my rock that I can kind of go out there and feel more things, and I always know I can come back. And my experience have gotten stronger, actually, since me and Ryan, because I was afraid of it, and Ryan embraced it so wholeheartedly that, you know, my fear goes away. And so I know sometimes he would like to feel more things, but I'm like, I'm glad you're here on this earth, because you'll always pull me back, you know? So.
So one of the things that I heard when I was growing up a lot was that Mormons can always be picked out of a crowd because they just are happier than anybody else because they have the gospel. And they smile all the time, and you can just tell the difference between a Mormon and a non-Mormon. That's something that I heard a lot growing up. You have a different way of looking at people where you can see more than just their smile. Do you see any difference between Mormons and non-Mormons spiritually?
That's, you know, everyone's so in a different place. But a lot of times what I will say, what people have on their face is not what's going on inside.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And I think, you know, and I guess I've learned too, we can be so judgmental of people that because they look a certain way, they're on a spiritual, you know, you must be on a spiritual path because you look right. You know, when that's really, you know, I've been so humbled in that regard. And I don't consider myself a judgmental person, but I'm constantly humbled in that way. Just that whatever judgment I had made was, you know, incorrect. So I, you know, to group all Mormons together, that's way too many souls, I think, to stick in one bundle, you know?
Well, and I don't think that just because Krista in this life, in this whatever, at this moment in time, it's right for her to be part of the Mormon church, doesn't mean that it's the one and true living church on the face of the earth. It's just another way to gain experiences and experience life. And I don't think that there's, you know, I think there's something special about the Mormon church, but I mean, there's something special about Hinduism, and there's something special about Judaism, and there's something special about a lot of religions. And I mean, there's something to be said about atheists. I think that I can kind of see the beauty of looking at life with an atheist point of view, and just embracing this one experience that you have, and
people around you, embracing them too.
Yeah. So it's not like Mormonism, just because Krista's a psychic and it's right for her to be Mormon, doesn't mean that it's right for everyone in the world to be Mormon. I think that we're too diverse to need just one single set of beliefs. And like she was saying earlier, can we actually comprehend what's beyond this life? You know, we're in this mortal existence, and God is God is so much bigger than, you know, being a white heterosexual male that's in charge of everybody. He's just bigger than that.
Well, and I like to think about it as, like, you know, what we're seeing on this earth is like seeing shadows, you know? And when you see what makes shadows, a lot of times you're surprised about the size of things, or, you know, it's just, we're seeing 2D of something that's 3D. Well, we're seeing 3D of something that's 4D, or maybe 5D. I don't even know. But it just, yeah.
There's more depth to existence than we can even comprehend, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, that feels like a good place to end on. But is there anything more that you wanted to say about your experience than we were able to cover here?
I think that was it. It's been a trip. I mean,
it's every day is an adventure.
Now, you guys have a website, right? And
yeah.
You've told your story that people could go and listen to in another format on that website. Do you want to give the URL for that?
Yeah. My website is earthsongcirclehealing.com. Yeah.
That's it.
That's where you find me.
And with people... Do you work with people via the internet, or do you have to be there in person, or how does that work?
I do it in person. I have clients. I worked with someone in Hawaii yesterday, and I'm working with someone from Canada tomorrow. So
Skype over the phone,
kind of everything. So it's good. Sometimes I actually like to work better over the phone because I don't get distracted by like a person's reaction. I shouldn't really say that, but I get so, you know, into, you know, what the person's feeling. Sometimes I feel like I actually give a better read long distance. Even though it seems a little more impersonal, you're getting clearer and more accurate. I shouldn't say that. I'm not accurate in other ways. It's just easier to get a clearer message when I'm not looking at you.
I'm so worried that you're like been reading me the whole time.
I haven't been reading
okay,
you
all right.
at all.
Okay. Good. 'Cause I've got things I want to hide.
I'm sure. Yeah. No, I can turn it off. I don't read people. I don't sit around and read people. People get worried about that too. And I'm like, no, I want to be a human too. That's one of my deals. Like, because when I first started to be this way, I would have ghosts waking me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and like it never stopped. And finally, I decided, you know what? The most important life is the life that I have right here, right now. And unless I'm having that life, I'm not going to do all this extra work for people. You know, I need to have my own experience. So I'm pretty good about turning it off. Because at first I would walk into the grocery store and like know everything about everyone. And I can go grocery shopping now.
Yeah.
I don't get anything. I just look at the bananas.
All right. That sounds great. Well, thanks, guys, for coming on and telling your story.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Glenn.
All right. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye.
The host of today's episode was Glenn Ausland. Producing and editing was done by Heather C., and the theme music was provided by McCall Erickson. Thank you for listening. Mormon Expression Voices is a production of the Whitefields Educational Foundation. Find us on the web at whitefieldseducational.org. The Mormon Expression and Mormon Expression Voices podcasts, as well as other educational initiatives, are made possible by your generous donations. Please consider a subscription today. Leaps.